I'm pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, John McVeigh. Welcome, John.
Thanks very much, Michael.
Now, we were at 3 Pakenham Street, Fremantle, pretty much in the centre of old Fremantle in a magnificent, or what looks like a warehouse. What has this building been over the course of time, John, before we start talking about the distillery that I'm looking at here?
Yeah, it was built in the 1920s, as far as we can tell, and it was a shipping building. It housed cargo, and later it was a warehouse and repair building. It's most recently it was Curtin University's IT annex, and there was offices actually built within the framework of the building.
Now, I've mentioned the distillery, and I'm looking at this, and the listeners of this podcast will see the photograph of this distillery that I'm referring to. It looks like a magnificent organ that you might find in a concert hall. It's my first take on it. Although a couple of these tall, beautiful-looking things look like clarinets. Can you quickly tell us what's happening in this building, and what's the state of progress?
Well, four years ago or so, my partners and I, Jason Towns and Matt Judici, and I decided that we were going to build a distillery, and particularly a gin distillery, and we wanted to build it in Fremantle, and we wanted to integrate with the home of our distillery, which would be a hospitality venue offering both food and beverage and gin-related experiences.
Now, you've obviously come a long way in 4 years, although probably to you it seems like a couple of lifetimes. How soon will we, the public, be able to see and have it all revealed to us?
Well, it's most probably early Q2 2020. We're waiting on the bottles to be finalised. Our bottles are being manufactured overseas. They were designed in United Kingdom. It's an intricate design, and we're just having a few technical issues with the production at the moment. So that's the long lead time item. And between now and then, in March, we need to build the hospitality venue, which is going to house 350 people.
Now, that on its own is going to make this a significant location, destination, within the city of Old Fremantle. No doubt you'd agree with that.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole idea was, and the name of the business, which is Republic of Fremantle, was deliberately targeted to reflect our allegiance to Fremantle and all Fremantle stands for, and to Matt and Jason have variously built Bread in Common, and they own Strange Company, and we wanted something iconic in the West End, and to help preserve and revive the West End for people, both locally, nationally, and of course internationally.
The wonderful thing, even though we talk about the West End, of this location at 3 Pakenham Street is that it brings activity over towards Phillimore Street, closer to the railway station, closer to the port. It sort of fills out this part of Fremantle. Who do you think would be the range of people who might come to a venue like this in the end?
That's an interesting question. I mean, we thought long and hard about that. We think first and foremost there'll be a hardcore of Fremantle community who come to the venue to not only experience the hospitality we offer, but the whole idea was on education and interaction as well, and experiencing something that's not just going to a pub. So that's the first community we're focused on, hence the citizens campaign when we launched. There are 220,000 odd visitors to Fremantle in the increasing cruise liner business, and I've worked in around the West End for probably the last 15 or 20 years. I've noticed a lot of tourists who have actually nowhere to go that's of much interest to them, especially on this side of the West End. So we're very heavily focused on exporting the Fremantle brand and secondary exporting our brand to the international community, and to give another experience. We're certainly targeting being one of the top couple of tourist attractions in Fremantle. And obviously gin lovers from all over the world, because we're creating something unique in the products we're making that we think will appeal.
Now, I've got about four or five questions that come out of this, and see if I can remember them in some sort of order. But one of the first things you mentioned was an education aspect. What's that?
Well, interestingly enough, gin in itself has got an incredible history globally. I mean, you can certainly say that the origins of gin is Geneva, which was Dutch. Hence, in the Napoleonic Wars, when they gave soldiers a pint or so of Geneva before they went into battle, it was called Dutch courage. Hence, the origins of Dutch courage. But it's very closely associated with the British Navy, and so the whole history of gin is steeped in the history of colonialism, and as a part of that, the origins of Fremantle and Western Australia. So the next part is apart from the education on the history of gin and how it fits in with Fremantle's place in the trading world. We've bought 20 stills, mini stills they are. And the whole idea of that is that people can experience making their own gin, i.e. putting a range of botanicals, including juniper, which is required for gin, into their own little mini stills. And we teach them about botanicals and mixtures of botanicals, and they make their own gin and take their own bottle of gin home with them.
So that's a lot of fun. The next question is, where is this great, relatively recent, it seems to me, enthusiasm around the country and elsewhere, no doubt, for gin come from? What's your take on that?
Well, historically, gin's been seen as quote, poor man's drink, and a mother's ruin, if you remember the history of gin in the United Kingdom. And it had a poor reputation up until about the mid-80s, when Bombay Sapphire was launched in the late 80s by... A lot of people think that's an old gin, but it was actually launched in 1989. So that's kind of launched a new interest in gin, and that was quickly followed by Tanqueray. And then it was Sipsmith in the United Kingdom, and our master distiller was the master distiller of Sipsmith, that launched the idea of craft gin. It was the first distillery to be introduced into London for 189 years. And it piqued people's imagination about what gin actually is, and that spawned what's the craft revolution of gin that's gone worldwide.
Now, coming back to the Republic of Fremantle, will that be the name of the business that you see out the front?
Yes, yeah. I mean, everything's crafted around the idea of the Republic of Fremantle. Obviously, we love the name when Jason suggested it, as being very much reflecting how we felt tongue in cheek about the world and about Fremantle. And then the idea expanded to focus on what it means to be in a republic, which is the idea of citizens and the idea of giving and taking and sharing and the idea of community. And that spawned then the idea of our bottles and our products being about social currency. That is something you give and you take and you share with people.
Well, it's a lovely concept that many of us who are... residents of Fremantle nearby will like the idea. I suppose there'll be a few dyed-in-the-wool royalists who, having heard what you've just said, struggle to enter through the doors, but no doubt they'll come just to see what it's all about. And you talked about, well, let's talk about the product you make. How is it just gin, and will it, what you make, only be consumed here, apart from selling it to people who will come in and go with it? Will you have an export market within Australia or elsewhere?
Yeah, lots of questions there. So, so when we first came up with the idea that we wanted to create a distillery, none of us had first-hand experience of how to do that. So we went to the gin founder in the United Kingdom, and the principal of the gin foundry is Olivia Ward. He's probably known as one of the top 10 gin experts globally, and commentators. And we've been working with him since then. The first thing we did, we went down the very, very hard road for creating a distillery. Under Olivia's stewardship, we decided that the future of gin lay in doing two things. I mean, most people think of gin as just botanicals on spirit, and they forget about what the spirit is. So the first thing that we decided to do was make our own spirit. That means we're out the massive stills that you see there behind us is firstly capable of making any type of spirit. It's not just a gin still. In fact, the gin still is the tiny little 230-litre one on the left, and the main apparatus you're talking about is a 2,000-litre Mueller's pot still with 35 plate columns, rectification columns, to concentrate the spirit to 96 ABV.
Tell us about what we're looking at here, and people will see in the photograph. Where was it all made?
So it's made in the Black Forest by Mueller's. Mueller's are a sixth generation craftsman, and their lineage is in making schnapps stills. In some parts of the Black Forest, there's a schnapps still. There's every fourth house in the whole area has a schnapps still. And that's how they started making stills. And we commissioned from them the largest still they've ever made. It pushed them to the limits. The 2,000 litre still, the main body of that had to be handmade. It was handmade in Switzerland, and Mueller's took then 18 months to assemble. It's an integrated rig, and they took 18 months to assemble it. The main pot is designed to take the, and this is the unique feature of what we're doing,
yes,
is not only are we making our own gin from scratch, whereas 95% of distilleries actually buy in spirit and then make their gin. We're not just making it from scratch in our own distillery, we're also making it from wine, which is going to create a totally unique flavour profile. It's got a sweetness to it and a kind of almost an apricot tone to the spirit. And many people who taste it neat, you don't have that harsh coughing sensation of tasting a strong spirit. It's this smooth, almost like a grappa-like characteristics to it.
Now, the wines you use, they'll be no doubt locally sourced, and what are we talking about, white, red?
Yeah, no, we were worried about getting the same variety all the time. They are locally sourced in the sense they're West Australian wines. We got our first batch from the Great Southern, and that was 5,000 litres of Riesling. And then we started sourcing wine from the Margaret River, and that's SSB, and we got 25,000 litres of that. And the last two purchases have been two lots of 80,000 litres of Chenin Blanc from the Swan Valley. Basically, when you're distilling it to 96 ABV, you've got the whole idea of it's called NGS, neutral spirit, but it's not quite neutral, and so you're getting a residual flavour. And there will be variances because it's a natural product. There were variances in the flavour between the different white wines, but that we think will only enhance the intrigue and the interest in not always getting a bottle of gin that's exactly the same as the one before. It'll have the same overall taste, but there'll be some nuances in it that make it different. Hence the same difference with winemaking. It's always Lewin Estate is going to be different year on year, batch on batch. So it's the same thing.
Well, that'll keep the consumers coming back to see where it's got to. Well, John, let's bring this interview to a close. First, let me say thank you for letting us in here to have a look at what's happening. I think Michael Petroni and Space Agency have been doing some space wondrous things in the building. It's got a little way to go, but not much.
Yes, yeah, we're the design's typical Michael. It's a fantastic design. It's it celebrates the fabric of the building. It celebrates what's already here. It celebrates the old while building the new. Not trying to change what is old. Leave it there and celebrate what went before us. But build in a highly functional and attractive fabric inside of that. And we think the hospitality is going to be superb, and we've got the capacity to open and close different parts of the venue as well. So Michael's thought through it over the last couple of years, and we're really looking forward to it, finishing it off.
Now, people in Fremantle and further afield who want to know more about it, I think can go on the web or other places to discover more. What's the best place for them to go?
Yeah, certainly look up Republic of Fremantle online, on the internet. We've got a campaign at the moment, the Citizens Campaign, and that's to become a citizen. People might have seen the big banners hanging over the Octopus a couple of weeks ago, much to the chagrin of some people. But that's about launching the idea of belonging to the Republic of Fremantle by participating in events here and being early in to buy our first batch of the spirits. So Citizens Campaign and Republic of Fremantle website.
Well, before long, the City of Fremantle Council will probably be holding their council meetings down here in the Republic.
Yes, they are actually having holding their drinks here, the Christmas drinks here, to have a look around at the Republic, and maybe they'll put the mayor will put the make this his new headquarters.
Well, wouldn't surprise me at least. Well, thanks very much, John, and good luck with the whole enterprise.
Delighted, Michael. Thank you very much.